This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
And that way, if it crashes, we can see if it's crashed. Right, you got those? You emailed yourself those notes, or?
I've got my phone on aeroplane mode, so hopefully it shouldn't be transmitting any signals so I can keep it by the computer.
Smart move, mate. All right, let me bring up my little notes. So, you know what? Let's just go for the flow. We're going to admit it that we're doing this on the fly because we're parents. I also want to discuss that as well, kids.
Well, we can discuss all the problems we've had lately. You know, today, I think everything's just against us to get this episode out. The snow and everything.
We'll do it, though. Let's have a look. All right, so that's a count of three. This is episode 33 as well.
Cool.
Okay. 3, 2, 1... And welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me once again is...
Dean Swain.
How are you, matey? You alright?
Yeah, I'm good. Pretty much snowed in at the moment.
Right, yeah, because you live in the middle of nowhere.
I do live in the middle of nowhere, and it is totally white this morning. I think this is about the third or fourth time we've had snow already this year. It's getting a bit crazy, really.
Right, so actually, before we start going on, Dean, telling everyone, you know, what's happening, let's quickly tell everyone what today's show plan is. Now, me and Dean have tried to record this episode loads of times before, and I don't know whether it's Dean's end or my end, but it's not been working, has it?
No, the other day, I think it might have been both our internet connections. Here it is awful. I mean, to give you an example, I recorded a 15-minute video and trying to upload that onto YouTube took nearly 4.5 hours.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I don't upload my podcast to YouTube. You keep on saying upload them to YouTube, and I'd love to. And I tried, and I spent about 7 hours once. It was uploading, and what happened? The thing just crashed, and I thought, not going to do it.
Yeah,
not going to do it.
It is very time-consuming. Very frustrating.
Yeah, so guys, what we've got lined up for you, we have got a few similar things, like a review. We have got Name the Game, and a few other things, like what we've been up to. But we're going to sort of just ramble on a little bit about ourselves, what's been happening, the podcast, what we aim the podcast to be, the support we're getting from the community and all that. So yeah, let's start with those immortal words, Dean. What have you been up to?
Quite a bit, because it's been quite a while since we've recorded together. It was my birthday last week, so I've had a few games coming in.
Right.
Luckily, Damien has modded my Atari 7800, because I don't know if you are aware, but the PAL models of the 7800, they do not produce the greatest signal in the world. Basically, the output picture on your TV, it has a lot of interference.
Yeah.
And
right, okay.
Yeah, he's done that for me. So that's come back and that's looking all nice. I've been buying quite a few Atari games, basically.
All right then. So why don't you tell us, first of all, how old are you now, Dean?
38.
38. Mm. 2 years away from being 40, mate.
Yeah, don't remind me.
All right, so tell us, like, these games that you got for the Atari, did you buy these for yourself or did someone buy them for you?
No, I ended up buying them myself. Basically, the wife always gives me some money because she's, you know, not too clued up when it comes to games. So, yeah, I'll get on eBay and try and spot a bargain or, you know, go after something that I want to play. So, yeah, I've ordered myself, what did I get? Akari Warriors, that's arrived.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, on 7800. That doesn't seem too bad. Donkey Kong, which has cost me...
Oh, classic.
Yeah, it's a classic game, and the 7800, it's pretty much arcade perfect, apart from the sounds. But you can barely... It's very hard to find in this country.
Really?
Yeah, for some strange reason. I've had to buy it from Germany to get a PAL, get a PAL copy. And
yeah.
I think that's cost me just over 30 quid, including postage, for an Atari game. Yeah, I've got to admit.
Oh, my God. So you spent quite a bit. How much did Akari Warriors cost you then?
I probably paid about a fiver for that. with postage. You know, most of the games you can get fairly cheap, but the odd the odd game here and there does go for a city price, really, considering, you know, it's just Donkey Kong and you could probably pick it up on another system fairly cheaply. But I did fancy that, and yeah, I've probably spent a bit too much. I've done the same with Double Dragon on the 7800 as well.
Right.
Again, that is a hard game to track down, and I believe I bought that from Germany, and I probably paid roughly around the same for that a few months back.
The Germans must love you.
The Germans, they keep nicking all our PAL Atari games. Not a good thing.
Yeah, so now how do these 7800 games compare to the 2600? Because I had, well, the Atari Junior, I think, I had Donkey Kong on that, and that Ollie had two levels,
yeah,
and the
rubbish,
graphics weren't that great.
Yeah, it was crap. You had the gingerbread man as Donkey Kong.
Yeah, that's it. Cookie Monster,
yeah,
it looked like.
Yeah, it was a mix between Cookie Monster and Gingerbread Man. I mean, with Donkey Kong, yeah, it does look like the arcade game. But the trouble with the Atari 7800 is it uses the same sound chip as the original Atari. So there's a couple of games that use that. Basically, the cartridge has got a new sound chip in it. You know, they sound better, but it was expensive to produce. So most Atari 7800 games have that same clunky sound effect as the Atari 2600.
So the 7800 then, Dean, I'm not too familiar with it. Was it as powerful as, say, the 8-bit NES or the Sega Master System, but with weaker sound chip?
It's supposed to be, but I've got to admit, graphically, a lot of the games are a little bit blockier. And
right.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, you know, they had the best programmers working on the machines, or they just didn't get to grips with the machines. There are some great games on it. Like I say, Donkey Kong's a very good conversion. Mm-hmm. Miss Pac-Man is absolutely superb. Pole Position 2, but you know, they're all fairly basic old arcade games. You've got to be into that era to enjoy get the most out of it. I think anyone who had a SNES or a Master System originally and then bought an Atari 7800 is going to be kind of disappointed.
It's like going backwards a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, unless you can appreciate things from that time, you know, I don't think, which a lot of people, they won't, you know, which is a shame. But yeah, there's some good games out on it, and it is backwards compatible with the Atari 2600.
That's fantastic, mate. So what are the other games you bought? Are those the only ones you've got recently?
No, I did get Joust, which is a... Okay. Yeah, I don't remember Joust.
Ostriches and... I forgot what those things, Lancies, that you sort of have to try and knock each other off.
I only picked that up because it was going pretty cheap. There was another game, but I can't remember. It's down in the games room, down in the shed.
Right. In the shed, that's where you get neglected to, the shed.
Yeah, and it's freezing down there at the moment.
Oh, man. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what I've been up to and what I've been playing and collecting. So, yeah, I've had a month off work because my wife is, you know, has given birth to our beautiful baby Ramona. Yeah. My wife's had a few complications, so I haven't had a lot of time for podcasting and so on, which is good because I did take a break, Dean, from the site. And I quickly mention this. This site is looking amazing. I go away for a month and the site has gotten better.
It has transformed totally. Damien's done such a great job on it. Put a lot of time and effort into it and got it done fairly quickly.
Yeah, I couldn't believe. I mean, it just looks so well done. And since we've had the site really done, we've had loads of donations by loads of people. Let me give a few shout-outs, actually, because I don't know if everyone listens to the shout-outs at the end.
Yeah.
I want to thank Craig. I want to thank Anthony. I want to thank Daniel. There have been our sponsors for this month of February, and they've paid, which in total adds up to £35, and that pays for our monthly show. And I'm so grateful for that, guys. I really appreciate that. The forum has been transformed by, what's his name, Dappy. Yep, he's transformed the forum and it looks amazing. So I think we have got a really good looking site now.
Yeah, it is certainly, yeah, it looks very, very professional now. And it goes with the podcast so well.
I think so. Now we'll talk about the podcast on the site a little bit further on because I've got a little structure to this chaos. I'll quickly tell you what else I've been doing then. Now, since I've become a dad again, I was telling Glenn this, I've already got two kids from previous relationships, which I get to see on the weekends when I'm not working weekends. But I'm struggling now to find any gaming time because I've got a little one in the house.
Yeah.
Do you struggle at all?
Big time. Absolutely big time. Yeah, I already struggled beforehand. This is my second child. I've got a 7-year-old daughter, a job that is 12 hours a day. Yeah, it is a struggle. And that is why retro gaming suits me, because of the pick-up-and-play nature of the games. But even that in mind, it is still hard to find half an hour. You know, because, let's face it, half hour minimum is what you're going to take to play a game, really. And, it is a struggle. I'd love to know if there's other people out there. Well, there's got to be other people out there who are in a similar position, and how they get around it.
Yeah, no, completely. We'll touch more up on this in a little bit. But for me, I've bought myself loads of Mega Drive games, Dean, because I've gone Mega Drive mad, mostly because the games have gone cheap, mate.
Yeah.
But it's like we were just saying there, I haven't had the time to play them. Now, let me tell you the ones I've ordered. I got Virtual Racing for $5.99 on eBay. Boxed instructions.
Bargain.
I remember playing it. I remember it being fantastic. Graphically, I couldn't believe they managed to squish this down onto a 16-bit Sega.
Yeah, it's strange. A lot of people do slag it off, but I think it was a...
Do they?
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people slag it off, but considering the hardware... I thought it was a pretty decent conversion myself.
I think it looks decent. I first played this on one of the Sega Road Shows. We went to this festival somewhere in South London years and years ago, and I remember they had like a Sega bus, and they had all these Sega Mega Drives, and I jumped onto this little seat thing and played the Sega Mega Drive's version of Virtual Racing, and I thought it was amazing. So I thought, I haven't got any proper racing games in my collection, so why not get that? I've got Altered Beast.
Yep.
I love it. It's Wise from Your Grave.
Oh, yes. That sand chip, it does. it's become quite a legend, does it? Isn't it? That saying, Wise from Your Grave. The way the sand chip produces that bit of speech is pretty hysterical.
Yeah, no, I love this game. Again, I've played it a few months ago on my Mega Drive collection on the Xbox, but there's nothing quite like having the original cart on the actual console. Yeah. I think I got that for $1.99. Super Kickoff, I got that for about less than $1.99.
What's that like on the consoles?
I haven't played it. I have not played it. I just bought it because it was cheap, Dean.
Yeah. I've got to admit, I'll do the same thing a lot of the time, and then, do you end up really playing these games?
I've also got Strider. I think I got Strider for about $3.99 boxed.
Yep.
I don't think it's got the instructions though, but it's boxed. I love Strider. I think it's amazing. And to me, at the time, back in the day, it matched the arcade graphics. I couldn't really tell them apart. Put them side by side now, you'll notice them.
Yeah, I've never really got into that game.
No,
because I first played the Spectrum version, which was converted by Tiertex, which, they were rubbish. Yeah, I did see the arcade game, but I didn't really get into it. I must have played it, but... Yeah, that's something I'll have to pick up on the Mega Drive.
So I think that's all I've been playing and collect. Well, I haven't been playing. I've got my collection of games, and I think I've ordered something else recently as well. I cannot remember what it is. I'll probably get it through the post in the next couple of days.
Hello, everybody. This is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
So why do we collect games when we've got no time to play games, Dean? Why?
In the hope that we will have time to play games. I don't know. I think eBay can be quite addictive. Like I say, recently it's my birthday. I had a bit of cash and I did go on a bit of a spending spree. And at the time, you're paying a small amount for one game. Then this is another small amount for it. And it all does start to add up. I think you have to be quite careful. Unless you are made of money. I mean, if you go onto YouTube, you see some of these guys and they have these pickup hauls and they spend a fortune. And I do get a bit jealous in a way, but I also think, where the hell would I put it all and when would I ever play it?
Doesn't that make you wonder, though? What do these guys do as a living, or how do they have partners that understand this? Because my wife, she doesn't mind me collecting this as long as I don't spend a fortune.
Yeah.
But she's already told me, how are you going to find the time to play these things when you've got a baby to look after, you've got work to tidy up the house and just look after the other kids?
Yeah, I can only guess that these people don't have kids. They're in, really well-paid jobs, and they have big homes and very understanding partners, because I just don't know how you can fit it all in and pay for it and, just find a space to keep it all.
All right, then. So let's talk a little bit about your retro gaming shed, because I've got... Well, it pales in comparison. You've seen my shed. It's a little tiny thing.
I was hoping... Yeah, today you were due to come down. I was going to come and pick you up, but a smart car in the snow is not very fun. So I was going to show you the gaming shed. It's still quite messy in there because it's a fairly big shed. I've got a load of other crap in there. And, I've got one little corner where I've put some shelves up. I've got a little, what size TV is it? 14-inch Sony Trinitron TV. Right. This is the list of consoles I've got in there at the moment.
Yeah, please go for it, yeah.
Atari 7800, a NES, a SNES, Mega Drive with a Master System converter, Dreamcast, PlayStation 2. Yeah, there's quite a bit of room in there, and... There's people. I've just been slagging people off who get loads of stuff. There is a lot of stuff in there, but it's all the games I buy. They're very rarely boxed. I just go for what I can find cheap and cheerful, and as long as they play, because I do like to play the games. I think with a lot of these guys, they're collecting them. They've got to be mint condition, and they put them up on a shelf and look at them. They don't actually play them. I don't understand that mentality, but it's like I say, it's. Bit cold out there at the moment, but I've got a heater in there. I've got a Vectrex, forgot to mention that. Yeah, so I've got all the consoles really that I need. I would like to get a PC engine, but the games for that are very expensive and it's a bit of a niche market. So I'll probably stick to what I've got.
What's your favourite out of the ones you've got then, Dean? Out of the one that you got in your gaming shed?
Hard to say, really. I do like the Mega Drive, purely because of the reason you mentioned. It's cheap to collect for, and there's a great range of titles on it.
Well, now, why is that cheap, Dean? I mean, I think the games are just as good as a Super Nintendo. Why are they so much cheaper? You can get games for $1.99, $2.99, whereas in a Super Nintendo, you're looking at anything over $8.99.
I think the main reason was that the Mega Drive was probably a little bit more popular in the UK than the SNES was.
Really? Wow, okay.
I think so, it was out a little bit earlier. A lot of people latched onto it as early adopters. And also, the Nintendo games, when they were being released, I remember them being released for a silly amount of money sometimes. The cartridges were very expensive.
I think about £60, because when I first got my Super Nintendo, I think I was working in a hotel, and I bought myself a Super Nintendo, I got Royal Rumble, Super Star Wars, and I think I was paying £60 each for a game.
Yeah, there were some games on the Mega Drive. I think Virtual Racing, what we were talking about, Virtual Racing, that had the chip inside the cartridge that produced all the 3D stuff, so they had to charge a bit more for that. It was the same with... Starwing or Star Fox, what was it called on the SNES? My memory's
well, it's either Star Fox or Starwing. I think it was called Starwing.
Starwing.
Depends on the region.
Yeah, that's right. And, when a cartridge has a bit of extra hardware in it, they're going to have to charge a little bit more. We understand that.
That's understandable.
But when it's just a normal cartridge and they're charging £60, to me, that's just greed. And I think that's what's pushed the prices up. People think, well, it was £60 back then, it's got to be worth a little bit more now.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the mentality behind it. But, like I say, I just go for cheap and cheerful stuff. Don't get me wrong, if I can find it boxed and it's cheap, I'll get the boxed version, But
Completely. Now, what's the next thing I was going to say to you, Dean? Now, you've got electricity and power, and you've even got insulated.
Yeah.
How on earth did you manage all this? Because I want to do this eventually.
I've got to admit, I was very lucky. When I moved in here, it was all done for us.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The guy who owned the house before us was a gardener. He'd done landscape gardening. He needed all...
I thought you were going to say something else, like he had like some sort of like sex dungeon or something.
Lady Chucky's... but no, it was all done for us, basically. It was all insulated. The only other thing I ever had to do is stick a light up in there, because I was just using a little spotlight, but it was a bit too dark in there at times. I was tripping up over stuff. So, I've done that. And, as long as you put the heater on 10 minutes before you go down and sit in there,
It's not too bad.
It's not too bad at all. Yeah, it's like another.
Have you got anything else in there, Dean? Like any retro gaming magazines, like Crash or posters of retro gaming thing, like Maria Whittaker and Wolf from Barbarian hung up there?
No, I haven't. There might be a few magazines in a box somewhere. The only other bits and pieces I've got is that there's a Tomytronic 3D game up on a shelf, which I've still got, and some Nintendo Game & Watch things like Pinball and the little Super Mario Brothers that came out, little blue handheld LCD game. And, you know, I've still got some Transformer toys down there, but they're not on display or anything.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a little bit about my shed. Now, again, guys, we're doing this a little bit more retro rambling today. Normally, we pre-plan it. There is some sort of structure to it, but I just thought, you know what? Me and Dean have struggled to do this for the last week and a bit, and I just thought, let's get a show out. And I also want you guys to get to know us a little bit and find out how we game, what we have, and with family and stuff. Now, my shed, Dean's seen it, it's no bigger than a dog kennel. It's just like a little shed. It's really, really flimsy. And originally, my original games room was going to be what is the baby's room. But then, you know, obviously that's the baby's room. So then my wife says, well, you can use that shed out there for your gaming stuff. Which is fantastic, but slowly but surely I started finding things going in there, like the lawnmower, gardening tools and everything. So now all I've got is like a little chest of drawers with all my game consoles. I've got a Sega Mega Drive, I've got a Game Boy Color, what else have I got? A Sega Dreamcast, N64, GameCube, and by the way guys, I did say that correct. GameCube. I don't think I've got a lot more in there, Dean.
I've got to admit, I don't know how you fit all that in there, because that being horrible, it is a fairly small shed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not the size of the shed, it's what you do with a shed, Dean. Yeah, I've got it all nicely, like in a chest of drawers that I managed to pop in there. But all I really want that to be is just like, I want to get rid of all the crap that my wife's made me put in there and just have a couple of magazines, a couple of posters, a couple of chairs, put a bit of carpet in there, insulate it, bit of power, and hey, that's what I want. That's going to be my little paradise.
It's got to be your project again for 2013 then, isn't it? Get that sorted.
It just seems like my project at the moment is trying to change the baby, trying to go get the baby to go to sleep, Dean.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yesterday I took my daughter to see Wreck-It Ralph up the cinema, and I hadn't had much sleep, and I found my, I was falling asleep halfway through it. It was, yeah, I really wanted to see that film, but I was that tired. I was just dozing off.
Would you recommend what you did see of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly good film. There are, you know, moments in it, and you think, oh, I just spotted so-and-so character. You know, there is a lot of games and characters mentioned, or like little cameo appearances. I guess after the first half hour or so, it's not so much based on your retro stuff,
right,
like it was at the beginning. But yeah, it's a nice little film. If you've got kids as well, you know, it's an ideal excuse to go and see it. So yeah, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, now I think I will be taking my kids to go and see that. I think Glenn's gone to see this with his lovely girlfriend Jackie, and he said he's going to do a review of it, maybe on the next podcast or maybe on a video.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
Now, what machines would you want? You mentioned a PC Engine.
PC Engine, yep.
What are your must-have machines? If you had the money, say, for example, you won the lottery. Well, not the whole lottery, because you could just do whatever. But if you had, like, say, 20,000 to spend on for yourself that your wife didn't know about?
Right, PC Engine. I'd buy some more obscure consoles like the Amstrad.
Right, but why the PC Engine?
PC Engine? It was that console that came out at the late 80s that, you know, in the screenshots, the games, for the first time on a home system, they were starting to look like their arcade counterparts. You know, R-Type, Vigilante, Street Fighter, all those games, which were fairly big at the time, they looked pretty good on the PC Engine.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong though, Dean, was this an 8-bit thing with a 16-bit something?
It was billed as a 16-bit machine, but I believe it actually had like two 8-bit processors in it. Yeah, in a way, it wasn't as powerful. well, it wasn't as powerful as what many people thought, but it had nice graphics. A lot of the games do still have an 8-bit feel to them. You know, I've not played the system a lot, but what I have played of it, certain games are okay on it, and other games are really good on it. So it's a system that the games are rather expensive. I think if you've got the money, it's a system worth checking out.
All right, you've got two more machines then. What other machines would you get then, Dean, if you had the opportunity to?
It's hard because I think what I probably would do, one of them, I'd probably get an Amiga CD32. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, it was a big flop at the time.
Yeah.
But you can upgrade it so it's like an Amiga 1200. Or maybe I'd be better off just getting an Amiga 1200 with a CD drive, something like, because I was an Amiga boy back in the early 90s, and I do miss some of the games, but the actual Amiga itself, the games were on floppy, the games don't really load anymore on a lot of these systems that you find, basically the data degrades on the disc, so it's not the easiest system to collect for. I've stuck to emulation, but emulation doesn't really quite capture it all the time with a system like that. So, if I had the money, maybe an Amiga CD32 or a 1200. As for one more, I don't know. It's hard. Maybe an Amstrad GX 4000, just for a laugh.
Now, that didn't have much luck. I mean, it did have some decent games, like Pang. Pang was meant to be really good in that. I've seen it on Retro Gamer, and they've given it good reviews, and graphically, it's like an upgraded version of the normal Amstrad version.
Yeah, I think the trouble with that system was, a lot of the games were straight ports, or they just had a bit more added to them, not a lot, and they were charging, 25, 30 quid. And the games weren't really competing with the 16-bit systems. It was still the 8-bit Amstrad at the end of the day. I know it had hardware sprites and all that, so it was all a bit smoother and what have you, but at the end of the day, it was just a slightly glorified Amstrad trying to compete with a Mega Drive, and that just wasn't good enough. If it had been out a couple of years earlier, who knows, it might have done a bit better. But
I was going to say to you, how do these machines that you've mentioned sell on eBay?
The Amiga CD32's getting a bit more expensive these days.
What sort of price range are we looking at?
Probably 60 quid plus, which, for a fairly... it was a flop, and there isn't that many games out on it. Although, these days you can buy a CD that's got tons and tons of Amiga games on it.
Yeah.
But, to me, it's kind of expensive. I don't want to pay much more than 40 quid for a console, to be honest.
Well, the Amstrad machine that you mentioned, I've seen one of those knocking about really, really cheap on eBay.
Yeah, there's been a couple recently. There's some that have been modified. I don't know what... People have been basically spraying them up black or red and blue and trying to jazz these things up. And a lot of the time, it looks awful. They've been done really poorly. So do you really want that sitting by your TV, But, if money wasn't a problem, just out of curiosity, I'd like to get these and collect a few games from them. But, with the Amstrad GX 4000, the games are going for 25, 30 quid. And they're basically the versions that came on disc and on tape. So, you can't really justify that. I can't, anyway. I'm not poor, but I'm not rich either. I can't really justify spending that kind of money on a game that I'm not going to be impressed by.
Right, so my three then, Dean, that I would pick then, because you've got some nice selections there. The first one that I'd want to go for is the Philips Video Pack, also known in the States as the Odyssey. Now, I never owned one of these. My cousin had one, and my nephew had one. Have you seen one of these before, Dean?
No, not really. Only the footage that you showed me. I might have had a look on YouTube to see a bit more stuff running on it. Back to basics, basically.
Yeah, it's a really interesting console. I mean, it's like a console version of the ZX81, so it's got that flat sort of keyboard, and you get to press things. And what I used to love about it the most was the cartridge. It used to have a little handle that you used to push down on it, but each cartridge was labelled with a number, and you got a poster, and it had all the games that you'd have to collect. You'd be like, oh, I need number 3, I need number 4. Graphically, they're really, really blocky. It's like an early Atari game. But some of the games that I have, I think it's just nostalgia. I want it for that. I used to play this game. It was a cowboy game. You'd have like two cowboys either side of the screen, a bunch of blocky trees, and you'd move up and down the screen, sort of like Pong in a way, shoot, and try and get the other cowboy, and the bullets would deflect off the trees.
Yeah,
and so
I think that was also out on the Atari 2600 from what I remember. But yeah, it's strange. You said it, the word, nostalgic reasons, you know. It's,
yeah.
I think with a lot of stuff, you do. You think, oh, I remember those. I didn't have one at the time, or maybe you did, and you want to just like kind of recapture your lost youth sort of thing. But there's systems out there that when you're a kid, you didn't get to own. And now you've got a bit more money, and you know, I think that plays a major factor on wanting to get these systems.
Well, I think the other thing that I want to get, there's two more things that I want to get. They're not consoles, but they're... Okay, well, we mentioned this in a previous podcast, and it was Astral Wars. I love it.
Yeah, I still want one.
who was that, mate? Was that Tommy or Tommy?
Tony. No, that was Grandstand.
Grandstand, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, then, you know, there's loads of them sort of games. Off the top of my head, I forget the names of them because I'm getting so old. But
Astral Wars, Dean, it's just a nice-looking machine. It's grey sort of background, black sort of base. It's like a little miniature arcade screen. It's got like a little metal stick you sort of move left and right, a big circle button for you shoot. And it's basically us, you know, Space Invaders clone, but it uses full colour, and it's amazing. And I played one of these at Play Expo, and I just thought... I'd want to get one. And I think they sell anywhere between about 30 to 40 quid. The next thing I want to get is Caveman, which is definitely made by Tomy. And again, I remember, again, it's all nostalgic, going around to my cousin Alex's house, and he had one of these, Dean. And I used to love playing that game.
Yeah, I think we played this at Play Expo, didn't we? Back in October. Yeah, nice little game. And one that just sprung to my mind, and I think we have mentioned it on a past podcast, was Galaxy Invader. Again, it's just a little Space Invaders clone, but you know, they were simple games, but they're so playable. You know, a few people will say to you, oh, it won't hold up today, but that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're only going to play it for maybe 10, 20 minutes at a time, but yeah, they're great little games. You know, for me, 10, 20 minutes, that's all I get, so that sort of thing suits me.
Right, now, the next thing I want to sort of talk about, Dean, we've briefly mentioned it before, was the amount of time you get to play. When do you play these games, Dean? Because you said you work 12 hours, you've got your daughter, you've got the baby, you're doing the knowledge. When do you get the chance to play these games? I mean, do you set aside a time for them?
It's getting very, very rare to find time. And I don't know if you can hear my baby crying in the background. Apologies if you can. That's George, by the way.
He's the future Retro Asylum co-host.
Yeah, we've got two future hosts lined up. They're going to be trained up, and probably in about 20 years' time, they'll be on the show.
they'll be telling you all about the retro consoles they used to play, the Xbox 360, the PS3.
Well, they'll be really old by the time they're ready to host the show. Finding time is basically if my wife goes out and takes the kids, and I might have an hour before work or something, I might go down the shed and, you know, have a game of Rolling Thunder 2 or something like that. It is getting harder and harder. I'm guessing, you know, once the baby's a little bit older, and we're probably talking, you know, a good few years.
I thought you were going to say once the baby went to university, have a bit more time.
Well, if you say that, you know, it's strange. I was actually thinking about this morning. Once the kids are grown up and moved out, I might actually have time to do some gaming.
You might have grandkids by then, Dean.
Oh, they're not invited round.
No, I mean, for me, Dean, again, I work for London Underground and I do shift work, so my shifts can change day before because I'm what you call a reserve customer service assistant, so they can put me anywhere, let me know within 24 hours notice and change my shifts between 4 hours or 4 hours before or after. And I do most of my gaming on the journey to work because I live in Essex now. It takes me about an hour to get to London, and I use my PSP. And Yeah, that's what I do most of my gaming. Recently, I've been using my iPhone quite a lot because I've added a Spectacular and I've managed to add a few ROMs. You know, I've been sneaky and I've been playing the Dizzy games again. Now, normally Dizzy, I couldn't get into it back in the day. You know, it was a long process because there was no save slots. But the beauty of it playing on my iPhone, Dean, is I can sort of like do a certain bit, save,
yep,
and then another day, I can pick off exactly where I left off from. If I need to go to the loo, 5 minutes, I play a bit more Dizzy, and I finished 4 Dizzy games like that. And I love the fact that that's like my little hidden secret thing. I sneak off and do these things without my wife knowing, really.
Gaming on the toilet seat.
Alright, so let's move on to the next subject then, which is retro gaming events that we should be attending.
We should be, if we get the chance to, is another thing.
Retro has come back big time. There's loads of retro gaming expos and events happening throughout the year. Now, I want to tell you guys a few of the ones that are coming up that hopefully some of us will be attending. The first one coming up is Geek 2013, Dean.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, this is going to be happening over in Margate. I'm trying to think what date it is. I think it's, is it the 21st of February or the 22nd onwards?
Don't know. If you guys,
I'm going on the 24th, which is the Sunday, so I'm guessing it starts on the Friday, so 22nd of February, I believe. Yeah, it's similar to Play Expo, so I'm led to believe.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to be there on a Sunday, so is Foggy, which is Darren. Yeah, these things, normally there's a load of hardware with games running, games to buy, games on show. So, and George is shouting out, he can't wait to go.
he wants to go so badly.
He does.
Speaking about the children, though, Foggy's son's going as well, isn't he?
Yes. It'll be interesting, I guess. I'm not too sure. I think he's 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see what he thinks of all the games.
He's going to school him in retro gaming, show him what proper gaming is all about.
I'm guessing with Foggy, he's playing these games quite a bit at home anyway, so I'm sure that his boy is quite familiar with these sort of games. But, when we was at Play Expo back in October, there was a lot of youngsters who seemed to be enjoying the games. I think I mentioned on a past podcast about a kid playing Manic Miner, and he was playing it really well, so he'd obviously had a bit of time with it.
Well, just quickly go off topic a little bit. It's a topic on the forum, and it's basically sad times. And we're talking about seaside, towns, all the arcades have gone. And then I can't remember who it was. Someone mentioned that back in the days, all the youngsters used to go in there, play arcade games. And that is just something that has vanished. It doesn't exist apart from in these expos, which is it's amazing.
Matter of fact, just before we started recording, I was just replying to that topic. And I was just saying about, I was on holiday on the Isle of Wight back in 1990, because someone had said, one of the downsides about the arcades was you always had some pesky kid around just telling you how to play the game. I think it was Foggy who replied saying, no, that was part of the charm, you could show off to other people. And I replied saying, I remember playing Chase HQ in 1990, and I was quite good at the game, I could finish it on one credit, and I had a little crowd of people around me, and when you do it, people did get excited. They'd never seen the end of the game, and if you could get that far, you become a bit of a cult hero in the arcade. It was amazing, and you don't really get that anymore with any system, unless you've got your mates around you and they know you're good at a game.
Were you like the Billy Mitchell of Hackney?
No, no. You've seen my games playing skills. Double Dragon, Chase HQ, that was about the only two games I've ever any good at. Everything else I get butchered on.
Now, we've gone slightly off topic, but Geek 2013, it is spreading over 4 days. You guys have got guest passes, which was kindly organised by me.
Yes, thank you very much for that.
That's all right. I had to sort of plug myself there. Now, I just want to thank the PR lady who sorted that out for me. So thank you so much. We will be covering Geek 2013. We'll do loads of pictures. If there's a few legends there, we'll grab an interview. loads of pictures and videos, so stay tuned for that in late Feb. Now, what's the next big main event, which is Revival, I think it's called?
Right, whereabouts is this one being held?
Now, this is held in Wolverhampton, something... It's near like a racing track, dog racing track or something or another. But it's huge. This, I think, will be bigger and better than Play Expo. Now, it's being organised by Chris Wilkins from Retro Fusion. And he's put this together. He's run a few of these events before in the past. But he's come back big time for this one. He's got anyone who's everyone to do with retro games is there.
Yeah, I've seen there's a lot of appearances. I think my mate Jim Bagley's going to be there, hopefully with some Double Dragon code if he pulls his finger out. Hint, hint, hint.
I think we should just take Jim to one side and say, Jim, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think all of us should be really attending this, which is the most amazing thing. Now, let me quickly plug the event. The event's going to have hundreds, well, loads of arcades, loads of computers, consoles, handhelds. It's going to be absolutely amazing. But the best thing is, guys, we will be attending. I'm going. You're going.
Yep.
Glenn's going. I think Foggy's going. I think, what's his name? Matt's going as well.
Yeah, I think it's Damien who can't make it.
Yeah, he's always busy. He's like a secret agent or something, jet setting all around the world.
Well, you know, he's got a decent job. He's getting married this year. Make the most of
it,
mate.
Oh, yeah. And congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Mate. Absolute congratulations. You know, if you're listening to this, Damien, thank you so much for your hard work. Thanks to Lucy as well. We're over the moon for you guys.
Yep.
So.
And thanks for modding my Atari 7800, mate. You've done that over a weekend. Result, top man.
He's a top man. Right, so, guys. The plan is for Revival. We will be there. We're going to get there nice and early because, again, press passes. But we're going to be taking loads of pictures, loads of interviews. But in the evening, if you see us, we'll be wearing our Retro Asylum t-shirts. Come up, say hello. And I want to do something special this time. Later on in the evening, I want to do like a live podcast. So if we can find a little room somewhere, and if you are our listeners are around, why not? Come along with us, sit in the audience, we'll all interact, and you can see how on earth we put this show together. And it should be, you know, fun and interesting. And I think after that, we should all go out for a nice meal somewhere and get nicely drunk, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking, any other retro events? Probably Play in October again.
Yeah, I should imagine that's going ahead this year. I'm guessing it'll be up in Manchester again.
Yeah,
I'll use that same venue.
It's a good venue, and I think I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Reviews. Right, Dean.
Yes.
What game are you going to review today?
I'm going to review Elevator Action on the ZX Spectrum. Right, it's a conversion of a Taito arcade game from 1983. Back when you could make a game about anything. You know, there was games about dustmen, miners, anything. Any job that was out there, there was
any
a game
proper man trade, you could be in a video game.
So
yeah.
This one, use an agent, a secret agent, which, you know, it's not a bad idea. Basically, the idea of the game is you dropped off at the top of a building via helicopter, and you've got to make your way down this building in elevators and escalators. And the idea is that you've got to collect these secret papers that are hidden in rooms, and the rooms are indicated by having red doors. So, you start making your way down. At the beginning of the top of the building, the floors are not very wide, you know, and it starts widening out the lower down the building you get. And you've got these secret agents or bad guys just patrolling each level. And they go in and out of the rooms as well, and they're shooting at you. So you've got to basically take them out, collect your papers from certain rooms, make your way down to the bottom of the building where there's a car waiting for you. You jump in your car, and then you move on to the next level.
How often did you used to play this in the arcade, Dean?
Not that often, to be honest. It was one of those games that I only ever saw when we was on holiday, funnily enough. I'd had a few goes of it, and my mate bought it on the ZX Spectrum, and It's one of those games, it had, the music is better than the game. And that
really?
Was,
wow.
Yeah, it had a great soundtrack on the Spectrum and Amstrad versions by David Whittaker.
Okay.
And it was very different to the arcade's music. The arcade's music, it was crap, to be honest. You know, it's just a very boring tune. But, yeah, it's one of those games I used to load up just to listen to the music, and I started playing it more and more. It's quite an addictive little game. Yeah, it's just one of those games that I come back to every now and then. Unfortunately, the Spectrum 128K version, as good as it is with the music, there's a glitch at the bottom of each building which stops you getting into your car. Basically, it's a graphical glitch, and
yeah.
Your character can't walk left where the car's parked up for some strange reason. But, you know, in 48K mode, yeah, it's just a nice little playable game, so it's certainly one to give a try.
Right, so graphically then, Dean, out of 5, what would you give this game?
2.5.
It's, 2.5?
Yeah, it's not...
Are you dating this by, like, now or the way it was then?
Even back then, it's fairly simple graphics.
Right.
You know, fairly basic animation. It is more the playability of the game.
All right, playability then. What would you score this game?
I'll give it 4. 4 out of 5.
All right, and sound?
Sounds on the 128K, 4 out of 5.
So, overall, what would you score this game?
Probably a 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5?
Yeah.
Not bad. So, say 1 star is poor, 2 stars below average,
yeah.
3
average.
Good game.
Yeah, average.
4
yeah.
Really good,
yeah.
5
excellent.
Retro-tastic,
yeah.
You know, whatever.
Retro-tastic. Not off.
Yeah.
You got me doing silly voices now.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, definitely. Now, the game that I want to review, Dean, now, I know it's not your cup of tea, but I love it. It is... Castlevania, A Symphony of the Night.
Yeah.
Now, this game blew my mind, basically, because I was never a big fan of the, you know, 8-bit Nintendo Castlevania games. They were just poor, basic, I don't know, I found them dull. I didn't find them inspiring. It wasn't until the Super Nintendo Castlevania game that it really made me open my eyes up and think, wow, it's pretty interesting with the creepy music. But nothing had prepared me for this, Dean. Now, by the time the PlayStation came out, everything was 3D. Everything was sort of polygons and this and that, you know, arcade conversions. And I must have been going through one of my manga anime phases, because I walked into the shop that used to be in Brixton and I got this box in my hand, this Castlevania game, and it looked interesting. It had this boyish looking Dracula vampire thing, and the art was really good. So I thought, I'll get it, just for the sake of getting it. I had the money, and it said Castlevania, and I got this game home, and again, Dean, I opened up the box, and it had this amazing sort of like anime sort of manga comic book that came with it.
Yeah.
And it was truly amazing. I don't know if I'm wrong, guys, but I'm sure it came with like a CD as well of the music. I could be mistaken with that. That could just be me getting old. But once I put this game in, it wowed me. The overall presentation of this game, Dean, was amazing. This game basically picks off at the end of Castlevania, the one that was on, what was it, on the PC Engine?
Right.
And basically you play Richard, the vampire hunter, just about to kill Dracula. You kill him, it ends, and that's where the story kicks off, and we're introduced to, you know, our hero, which is Alucard. And Alucard is basically Dracula spelt backwards. It's the son of Dracula. Now, first of all, you start off with hardly any abilities. You know, you can walk around, jump, stab. And as you progress through this game, every time you beat like a mini-boss, because there's loads of mini-bosses scattered throughout, you upgrade, you power up. It's got like an RPG element. And you can pick up different swords, different sort of shields, and each one gives you like an extra point, or each shield will shield you against like fire or ice. So there's so many elements to this game that you can do. And what I loved about this game, Dean, as well as the graphics and sound, was the exploring nature of it, because throughout the game you're wandering around and you see little gaps on the ceiling, and you're like, how on earth do I get up there? And it's not until later, when you get like the jump, you think, ah, that's how I get back there. So it's got so much replayability factor, and it's even more, Dean. I'm sorry I'm dragging this out, but...
That's all right, mate.
You think you finished the game, and when you think you finished the game, I'm not spoiling it because I'm sure everyone's finished it. You know, you can finish a game. And I remember once I was working at Sega World, and I told this guy that I used to work with, I went, I finished Symphony of the Night, truly amazing. And he goes, did you use the truth thing where it's actually not the ending? And I was like, what do you mean? And he told me, and I did it the way he told me to do it. And what happens is the main baddie isn't really the main baddie. He was just under a spell, and then the whole castle rotates and it's upside down, and you have to redo the whole castle again. But that's not the end. Once you finish that, then you get to play as the original Vampire Hunter. And Dean, all this is an experience. That's the only way I can describe it, Dean. The sound,
it sounds like a very long one.
No, it is. It is. It's fantastic. It's a long game, Dean, but it's got save slots, which is it's why it works.
Yeah.
Every so often, you've got save slots, so you save it so you can pick up and play it. And it's very memorable. The music is like an orchestra score. And I'd never heard anything like this on our console, because when the PS1 came out, it was all sort of like Wipeout, sort of like, I don't know,
techno-y sort of music.
Yeah, or really heavy metal, proper instruments. But this was beautiful. And the animation is just like something out of like a manga, just amazing. So yeah, sound 5 out of 5, playability 5 out of 5, graphics 5 out of 5. It's a 5 out of 5 game. It's retrotastic. Yeah,
I take it you like that one then. It does sound good. I mean, I think, you know, we mentioned it before, I'm not greatly into anything that's got an RPG side to it, but
yeah,
if I ever find a lot of time to play a game, I'll give it a shot.
You know what we'll do now, actually? Why don't we play some retro gaming music, which was chosen by one of our community members on the forum. This month's one was chosen by Hollycall, and he chose the music from Psycho Fox. So guys, sit back and enjoy. So no little dance for you this time, Dean?
No, my dancing days are over. My daughter's told me that already.
Right, so why don't we move on to our next section, which is Hidden Gem then, Dean. Why don't you tell us what your Hidden Gem is and where did you hide it?
Right, well, it's been sitting under a rock in your Sinclair magazine for a very long time. It's another Spectrum game, I'm afraid, guys. I'm probably getting fed up with my Spectrum ranting and raving. But, yeah, this was a budget game from 1991. So bear in mind that it was only $2.99. It was Miami Cobra GT by Players Software.
Never heard of it, never played it.
Right.
Enlighten me.
Okay. Chase HQ. Imagine someone's just ripped the engine out of that game. And used it for an Outrun style racer, but with no choice on course. You know, it's just one route. That is the game. It is one of the fastest Spectrum racing games out there. It's very smooth. It's all programmed nicely. It's got nice graphics. It is a hidden gem. It's a very, very playable little game that was released, like I say, $2.99. And quality wise, it outdoes a lot of full price releases. It's not the most exciting game because there is only one route, and what I will criticise it on is that, you know, on Chase HQ you had dips in the road, and on Outrun, you know, up and down the hills. It hasn't got that. The course is very flat, mm-hmm. but the graphics are nice. It's got pretty decent sound effects, some nice title music, and hardly anyone's ever heard of it. So
I've never heard of it, Dean, but you've sold me on it when you said it's similar to Chase
HQ. It's so much like Chase HQ, you'll think someone's just hacked the code and changed the car.
Well, I was going to say, do you think they have done that?
Because the programmer had made, you know, I've checked this out, he'd been making games since about...
Who is this programmer?
Nigel Spice, I think his name is, or Sprite. Say it along those lines.
Good old Nigel.
Yeah, good old Nigel. I don't think he had just ripped it, but I think he's taken a look at the code and thought, aha, that's how they do that, I'll do my own version of it. Because the game even has turbos. Like Chase HQ. But, you know, you're not ramming any cars off the road. It's a straight racer, just like OutRun was, you know, racing against the clock. And, yeah, it was released on the Amstrad as well. I've not played or seen the Amstrad in motion, you know, not seen it running. But it's by the same guy. I should imagine it's equally as decent as the Spectrum version. But with
how was this
colour.
Scored back in the day, Dean, by the reviewers?
Well, you've got to think, it was a late game. It was only a budget release. It probably got about 80 to 85%. It didn't wow people because, like I say, it isn't the most exciting game. But it was so nicely produced, you know, and programmed. It's very slick. And it's just a nice game to play, especially for those people who had a Spectrum back then but might have missed it because they had upgraded by that time. Or, yeah, I don't think it even got reviewed in every magazine. It was just one of those games that went under the radar a bit. So, well worth checking out. Just get on YouTube, type in Miami GT, whatever it was called. Miami Cobra GT. Have a look for yourself. It does look very much like Chase HQ, but it's well worth a play.
Now, what we will do, guys, with this, we'll put this in the show notes, so that way, when you're reading the show notes, all you have to do is click on the link, and that will take you to, like, what the game is or where you can find it.
Yeah, we'll even link it into World of Spectrum this time, I think.
Fantastic, yeah. Alright, so let's move on to our next section, which is arcade conversion. Now, I've got one, and I think Dean will probably agree with this arcade conversion. Now, this arcade conversion is Shinobi on the Sega Master System.
Ah, yes.
Arcade conversions were a big thing back in the day, guys. They really were, because there was nothing bigger and better than an actual arcade machine. And the only time you could play these, like if you went to the seaside or there was a local fairground or to your local arcades. So we were lucky and blessed sometimes to have some amazing programmers who could achieve porting these to the home systems. And one of my favourite ports ever is on the Sega Master System. Dean, what is your view on the Master System version and why?
I'll tell you what, I love this version. I think it actually improves a little bit on the gameplay because you've got an energy bar. On the arcade game, as soon as you were hit once, you were dead.
Yeah.
You know, game over. Which is great for an arcade game because obviously they want the player to put in more money, you know, more revenue, the company's going to produce more games. With home conversion, obviously the game, you know, it suits it if it's altered a little bit because you need to be feeling you're getting value for money.
Yeah.
And with Shinobi, you were. The energy bar added a lot to it. And I believe, you know, the game, you had to earn your magic rather than just being given it at the start of the level, is that right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was, and graphically, you know, it's smaller in scale, but it just plays and sounds really well. Great conversion.
I completely agree with all the things you said there, Dean. I think it's pretty much on par with the graphics. I think at the time, and even to this day, you know, they do look very, very similar graphically. Playability-wise, like Dean said, the energy bar really added that extra gameplay element because you were paying, what, £40, £30 for a game. And like Dean said, it would have felt a bit cheap otherwise, and this helps you get that little bit further. And I love the sound in this game. The sound is amazing on the Sega Master System. It really sounds like the arcade game. The music is memorable. And this, for me, is my biggest memory of playing Shinobi. Now, I'd played Shinobi a few times in the arcades, but I played it non-stop on this system, and I loved it. I think it's fantastic. The level layout is slightly different. The scene where you're throwing your ninja stars is at a different point to the arcade, but I think everything is balanced out. And like Dean said, you have to earn your magic by doing the ninja stars, and it's great, and I recommend that you check this game out if you've got a Sega Master System.
Yeah, I think it's a great example of how the Japanese always used to convert games and fix it to the system, you know, take advantage of that system's abilities and take away parts that probably wouldn't have converted too well, you know. The Japanese were really good at that, whereas Western developers, when they converted games, they tried to do a straight-for-straight arcade conversion, and yeah, a lot of the time it just didn't work. And this this is a great, great example. Also, just on a side note, check out the NES version. I didn't know that this actually existed. It was only as I was doing a...
Tengen, isn't it, made by?
Yeah, it looks awful.
It is awful.
It looks very similar, but really wrong at the same time.
Yeah, what I'll do, I'll put a link to this as well. I've done an 8-bit wars on this, on the Sega versus Nintendo 8-bit wars, and it's one of my older videos, but you can see the comparison and you can see how close it is to the arcade game. Why don't we go on to a desert island disc section or game section, Dean? You're on an island, and for some bizarre reason, yeah?
Yeah.
You've got power. I don't know why, but you've got power on this island. You've got three games that you could play forever. What games would these be, and why?
Right. Tetris.
Right, okay. You wouldn't go insane. Start humming it.
I probably would go insane and humming it all the time. You know, just having that tune rocking through your head forever and ever. But no, it's one of those games, you know, I don't care what you say, everyone has enjoyed a game of Tetris on the Game Boy. It'd have to be the Game Boy version, the original right. Game Boy version. Yeah, I haven't played it in a long time, but it's one of those games I know that if it's there and it's switched on, I'll have a go and I'll get addicted to it again. Yep, so definitely Tetris is one of them. I'd probably have to have Double Dragon there because I'm really sad. And it'll have to be the arcade version.
Right, okay. Yes. Not the Spectrum version then?
No. Not the current Spectrum version anyway.
And what about the third game then, mate?
Thirdly. Probably
is
say...
Is thirdly even a word?
I'm sure it is.
Is it? Okay, listeners can leave us some email either at dean@retroasylum.com and tell us if it is an actual word, thirdly.
I'm sure it is. Maybe not. I don't know. No, I'm getting as bad as Glenn. isn't it? As he keeps saying. RoboCop on the ZX Spectrum.
Oh, wow, you stole mine.
Sorry.
It is a good game. Why do you like this game so much then, mate?
Probably the music more than anything. Plus, I was, you know, it's one of those games I'm pretty good at. It's still slightly challenging as I get older. My skills are getting worse and worse. And it's just a very slick game on the Spectrum. And, you know, I love that system. And I think that was when the Spectrum was at its peak around that time.
Right. You know, speaking about Desert Island Discs and stuff, this has made me think of something new for the forum and for the podcast. Now, I'm going to tell you what my three Desert Island Discs are and why. We'll put a section on the forum as well. And then what we'll do in future podcasts, we'll read out people's Desert Island Disc. And we'll, you know, if you leave us a reason why you chose that game, what it felt like for you and so on. And we'll read those out on the show. So my first one would probably be... I'm not sure if it's retro-wise enough. GTA 3?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, we're now getting on the PlayStations. What is it? What year did that come out? 96?
Yeah.
So, well, that's the original PlayStation. GTA 3, 2001. Yeah, I think we can consider that retro-ish. Right.
Another game I'd probably choose is Bubble Bobble. I love... No, actually, no, I wouldn't choose that, because like, you need two players
to play. You do, yeah, yeah.
I'd probably go for something like... I don't know. It's got to be something I can play... Okay, Pirate's Gold.
Pirate's Gold? No, I've heard of it.
Right, now Pirates was a game that originally came out on the C64. It's made by Sid Meier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It came out then later on the Amiga and the NES.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm with you now, yeah.
The best version, I think, is on the Sega Mega Drive, because it is one of those games you can pick up and play for ages. And hey, I'm stuck on an island, and why not play a game about pirates? So, yeah. My third game, Dean. Now, I could never get into this because things always got in the way. But you know what I'm going to go for? Elite.
Yeah. It's one of those games that I've always wanted to be able to get into. I did get into Frontier on the Amiga for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be addictive. But with Elite, I don't know why. It's a game I want to get the Nintendo version, funnily enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
It's meant to be okay on that.
But I can't see how you'd control it, though, like on a Nintendo with the joypad.
I'm guessing you have like a pop-up keyboard sort of thing. I'm not so sure, but I've heard it plays pretty well.
Okay.
I probably should just check out the Spectrum version on the, you know, an emulator or something.
All right, so let's round that section up. If you have got some Desert Island discs, we'll post this on the forum. Leave us three games, tell us why you like it, and we'll read it out on the podcast. Next up, it's my favourite section of the podcast, Dean.
Name the game.
Len loves it when you say name the game.
Name the game.
That's it. He will just listen to that on a loop non-stop.
Name the game. Name the game. Yeah, I'll stop. I'm getting annoyed.
Right. So, Dean, who's going to go first, me or you? Are you going to try and guess my game?
Yeah,
or
you go first.
Right, so let Dean think of a game. I'm going to give him a little bit of time by explaining...
I've already thought of the game, but don't worry. Go on.
I haven't, so I'm killing time. Basically, the way this works is I'm going to think of a little game in my head, and Dean has to guess what it is. I can only answer in yes or no. I can feel nice and give him some clues from time to time, and vice versa. Dean does the same thing. All right, so who's going to go first, and Dean?
I'll go first, trying to choose your game.
Right, so let me think of a game quickly. Think of a game.
Or do you want me to go first?
No. I'll
sure?
Think of a game. God, okay, you go first.
Okay, ask away.
Right, is it an arcade game?
Yes.
Is it made by Sega?
No.
Capcom?
Nope.
Taito?
Nope.
IREM, I think they're called, or whatever.
IREM? Nope.
Yep. Ooh, Namco?
Nope.
Oh gosh, who else is there? Atari?
Nope.
Midway?
Nope.
Alright, is it a beat-em-up?
Nope. Well, there is a punch move in it, so technically I guess it could be seen as a beat-em-up, but no, not strictly.
Right, is it a platforming game?
Yes.
It's a platform game that you can punch. Right. Was it converted to the home systems?
Oh, yes.
Was it converted to the Atari 2600?
Yes, it was great on that. I used to play it loads.
Was it Popeye?
Yeah!
Hey, I'm on fire.
It was by Nintendo, by the way, on the arcade.
Oh, there's that. Yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I had a feeling, like, we had talked about this ages ago, and I know you're a big fan of that game.
Yeah, great game. You've got to play the music after this. I want to hear the music to that game. Super.
No worries. Yep, I'll have it playing right now.
Good, good.
Right, so, Dean, I've chosen a game now. Name the game.
Okay, is it on the arcade?
Yes.
Is it a platform game?
Nope.
Is it a driving game?
Yes.
Do you drive a car in the game?
No.
Enduro racer.
How on earth did you know that? Wow. You're on fire. Are you looking at my show notes?
No. I've not got... You wouldn't have wrote that down anyway. You wouldn't have been that silly. I don't know why. That's just, it was either that or Super Hang-On, I guess.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, let's round that section up. Now, the next section I want to talk about, guys, is a little bit about the podcast. We've been doing this now, Dean, for about a year, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I remember you saying on episode one, you could really see this show going somewhere. How did you guess, mate?
It was my logo that done it.
So the whole show's success is down to that one logo?
Yeah, people just, you know, they love the logo. No, to be honest, yeah. I think it's because... we have a laugh whilst recording the show, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is hard, we're tired, you know, we try and get this out regularly. Obviously, it's not always us, and that's the other good thing, is we now have such a range of different hosts, presenters, whatever you want to call them. They're all decent people. They all come from different backgrounds of gaming, you know, different stages. Mm-hmm. Me, you and Darren, probably, you know, we're the eldest. We've got a similar outlook. I guess me and Darren, we're slightly older, so, you know, we remember the late 70s with the gaming. You've got Glenn, who's enthusiastic. You know, we've got Matt, we've got Damien now helping out. It's... obviously, I didn't know about that at the beginning, but I knew that we had a great rapport together. And, you know, the UK gaming podcast scene, there isn't really much competition. That doesn't make sense.
Dean's put that line across the floor and he's daring people to step up and cross over it.
Yeah. No, without being rude, there isn't, because, you know, a lot of... you know, there's only a few different UK-based ones, and I think a lot of them go a bit too technical at times. And I know that our guys can go quite technical at times, but, you know, the majority of our episodes, we're not technical guys. We just like to talk about the game and how it played. You know, it's all mainly from memory. That's why it sounds a bit rough around the edges at times. But I think people can relate to that. They want to, you know, they can... think of themselves going down a pub, chatting with a mate, and they start talking about games. Do you remember this game? Bang, yeah, I remember it. You know, it's a conversation, and that's how this show works. That was always the main idea behind the show. So, you know, it was bound to catch on, because all the American retro gaming podcasts, they ramble on about Nintendo all the time and the Atari all the time, and it just seems to be the same old thing over and over. Whereas in the UK, we had the Atari, we had the Nintendo, but we also had the Spectrum, the Amstrad, the Commodore, you know, the BBC. There's all these different systems that the Americans missed out on.
Yeah.
Now, during the 80s, this country was producing some of the finest games, we had some of the best games designers. And, you know, we have so much more to talk about than, you know, a lot of these other people. So, yeah, that's why I've always had a feeling, you know, we would do okay. And the past year, the show has grown, and the past 6 months, it's just gone strength to strength. And I'm really enjoying it. I want to say thank you to everyone who does listen. All those people who are listening, we know, because we... you know, we get all the information through. Please come and join the forums. Join in. There's the forums, they're fairly busy at the moment. I've got to admit, I'm finding it, especially the past few weeks, it's taken off. I'm finding it hard to keep up with all the posts, and there's a lot of stuff I'm not being able to reply to, because, you know, I've missed out on so much of the conversation. But, you know, this really could be a busy community, really busy. So please do get onto the forums. We know you're out there. We know you're enjoying the show, but please do join in. It'll make the whole thing that much more interactive, and you know, we can get you on the show. We'll chat about games. Please do join in.
Yeah, cause, I mean, that's one of the things I like about this show, Dean. I mean, we're very open-minded. We're very sort of friendly. We'll have a laugh. It's just we will invite our community, and that's how we got our other co-host in a way, because I enjoyed talking to Darren. I enjoyed talking to sort of like the other guys so much that they're part of the podcast now.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. We've got a lot of our community have really become involved and really kept us alive.
Yeah, sorry, there's a bit of background noise. Yeah, it really has. You know, we've really got a strong bond now with all the new hosts who have joined. They've become part of the show, and they started off as listeners. And
yeah,
I think that's one of the key things with us is we're quite open to helping other people out. Other people, if your site's not doing too well, don't take liberties and come and spam on our site. We don't like that, but come in, we'll give you a mention on the podcast if we feel that you're
contributing
and if you if you've got something decent to offer, yeah, we will give you a shout if we think it's worthwhile. So if you are struggling but you think you've got a good product or a good website or whatever, good videos on YouTube, give us a shout, we'll check them out, and if we do like them, we'll freely give them a shout out on the show. Same as retro gaming shops. We're mentioning decent shops that are out there. We're trying to help you guys as well, because there's one here near me called Games to Replay. Now, so many people in the area didn't know that this shop existed. It's a small little shop. It's in a fairly quiet location. And, people are going down there now and spending money, and hopefully that shop will stay open, because in these hard times, a business like that is nigh on impossible. But if they've got regular people going down there and buying their stuff, that's great. And, without being big-headed, that's down to Retro Asylum.
Wow, Dean.
Yeah.
You sound like you've like the mayor of Retro Asylum. You've just given like an amazing spiel there. Now, I completely agree with everything you said, mate. I mean, for me, the last year and 3 months has been a real blast. I mean, I can't imagine sort of like not talking to you or Glenn and the other guys about retro gaming. It's become part of my, I really consider you a good friend now, Dean.
Yeah.
Through all this, we've really bonded, I think,
Definitely.
And I think that really shows in the podcast. It shows that we are friends. Because me and you, before we started doing the shows, podcasting, we didn't know each other,
No, it's, and like most of the other guys, I found out about you by 8-Bit Wars on YouTube, your mm-hmm. video series. And I think I started stalking you, messaging you. And, I can't remember how it actually happened, but we got chatting, and one thing led to another, and that sounds wrong as well. We've become really good friends, and it is through gaming. So,
I think that's what it is. We share that sort of like retro gaming experience, the same sort of like we're sort of the same sort of age,
yeah.
And the fact as well that we both do shift works, it's hard, we find it hard to do. We've got little kids, and I think that really helps us bond that little bit more.
Definitely.
Right, but let's start rounding this up. I want to say big thank you to the whole team, which is Denaris, Foggy, yourself, Swainy, Glenn, our moderator, which is Darren, and I'll give myself a pat on the back as well.
Why not?
We've done really well on the site. I'm going to be back full time from this week. I'll be sort of doing things on the site again, more videos and so on. Me and Dean hopefully will be doing the 8-Bit Wars somewhere down the line.
They will return, I promise.
Yeah, big thanks to all our listeners. Big thanks to everyone, basically. We'll read out the iTunes in 1 second, Dean. Do your shout-outs.
Shout-outs to all our hosts, everyone who is listening to the show. There's quite a few people out there now who are starting to listen. Tell your friends about it and just keep listening to the show and let us know what you like, what you don't like, and thank you very much.
Oh, I keep forgetting to mention retroasylum.com.
Yes, the new website.
Retroasylum.com. Just spread the word. Tell everyone about it.
And if you haven't been on there, in 6 months, come back, have a visit, check it out, because I think you really will be impressed with how the site is looking now.
It's been completely updated. It's like Retro Asylum 2.0 now. Right, so let's... Have you got your iTunes reviews ready, Dean? I'll read the first one.
Let me just get on to it.
So while you do that then, let me quickly read the first one. It's a 5-star iTunes review by Retro Owned. He put, a great show, a great attitude, a great inspiration. Recently decided to start writing a blog about my gaming memories and my thoughts on games as I play through them again or even for the first time. Hopped on the internet to find some inspiration, and this podcast was great. Great help. Love the relaxed approach, have subscribed and will be listening from now on for sure. Thanks for the inspiration and keep up the good work. Now, this is done by Retro Owned. Now, Retro Owned, let us know what your retro blog is, and we'll plug it on the site. And yes, it, you know, we're more than happy to do that. Okay, so the next 5-star iTunes review is by Press Start Dead, and he put, awesome podcast, or awesome. Now, this is an interesting one, Dean, actually. He put, I saw these guys handing out flyers at this year's Play Expo. It wasn't until a few days later when I emptied out my goodie bag and found the flyer again that I decided to check out their podcast. Labeling themselves as the UK's best retro gaming podcast is no small boast. Fortunately, these guys live up to the hype. The podcasts are frequent, fun, informative, and there's always something featured that gives me that warm buzz of nostalgia. A must with all podcasts of this kind, recommended for all fans of old school gaming. Keep up the good work.
Nice.
Now we've got two more now. By Dibs Soul Star, put Retro Goodness. He put, what can I say? Brilliant show, one of the first go-to shows to listen to. The team keep it fresh and interesting with a selection of interesting topics and different host styles. If you love video games back in the day, this is a must-listen podcast. Really brings back the great memories of your childhood gaming history. Also encourages you to play those past James games. Right, so the last one is by Skytrax74, and he put, brilliant. This is genuinely the best retro podcast. The sheer amount of 5-star reviews says it all. I'm only on episode 12 and have enjoyed them all. I'm a Speccy fan, but hearing about other systems really interests me. The lads are very knowledgeable and also know how to keep the listener entertained while delivering a great facts about some of the greatest systems ever. Cheers, guys.
I think that says it all. I've just got to say, it's strange, you know, I'm one of the hosts on the show, but I look forward to every new episode. Not the ones with me on, because I don't like listening to myself, but all the ones that everyone else records, I actually, you know, on a Friday, first thing I do is put my phone on and check out what episode is on there. And you know, I think that says it all, really.
No, I completely agree. I mean, the show's out every Friday. Sometimes we're a little bit late, so the latest will be Sunday. I enjoy listening to other people's show as well. It's a very different style to the way me, Dean, and Glenn do it, but I learn something new. Like, going back to Foggy's top 10 C64 games from 1983, that really hit a chord with me. I really listened to that and thought, wow, I can really relate to that. Some of the games I wasn't too familiar with, and that really entertained me, and that just... An hour of my time went by so quickly. Love it. So guys, please leave us iTunes reviews, subscribe, tell your friends, neighbours, mistresses, everyone that you know about the Retro Asylum podcast and RetroAsylum.com. See you guys later. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.